day to live. One more night again. One more blunt to smoke. One more high again. One more time again. She say one more time again. She say rub my body. I wanna feel your skin. Look me dead in my eyes. Can you feel the wind? Is this the very last time I'ma get to show you my love?
What's going on, everybody? It's your boy Jordan.
And this is Desmond.
And welcome to episode 197 of Two Black Nerds. That's right. It's that time once again for us to bring you our opinions and hot takes on all things fandom, pop culture, and entertainment. As always, you can find Two Black Nerds wherever you get your podcasts. Please make sure to hit that subscribe button and leave us a friendly rating and comment to show your support. And of course, join in on the conversation each and every week by following us on Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok at Two Black Nerds. We appreciate that. Love y'all. And let's not forget to mention, we have brand new merchandise that's available now at twoblacknerds.com. Go check out our Two Black Jedi and Sith collections inspired by Star Wars. We got t-shirts, crew neck hoodie, stickers, mugs, and tote bags. So go ahead and place those orders right now. On today's show, we'll be reviewing the finale of the Marvel Studios original series, Secrets Invasion. We'll have a spoiler-filled conversation about this week's big moments and reveals, as well as share our thoughts about the series as a whole and where it ranks amongst other MCU television shows. But before we get to any and all of that, we're kicking off this week's podcast with our general big-picture thoughts about the final episode. So we have quickly arrived towards the end of this new event original series from Marvel. This is now, I guess, the ninth finale that we've received from a Marvel Cinematic Universe television show. It's hard to believe that we've already gotten nine TV series within the span of about 2.5 years, but we have arrived at the end of Secret Invasion. Coming off of last week's episode, there were a lot of questions that were introduced. Some things were answered, but one of the big things that we were curious about was this new MacGuffin that was introduced entitled The Harvest, which is apparently playing a very, very pivotal role in this week's episode. And of course, just the overall circumstances and how the finale shakes out. But before we dive into the spoilers and all the nitty gritty details about this week's finale, I just want to pass it over to you to get your general big picture thoughts about the final episode of Secret Invasion.
Unfortunately, this is an extremely, extremely underwhelming finale for, I think, a show, again, in the beginning, with the anticipation that I had very high hopes for, man. What's so interesting about this series is each individual episode, for the most part, isn't the worst thing I've ever seen. They all have, I think, something to take away, but also, at the end of every episode, I'm constantly being left with something I'm looking for. This last episode was okay. You can still do some things that make this TV show feel worthwhile, and you still didn't do them. And it just simply doesn't make any sense why you decided not to do them. Not only that, the way a lot of things were handled at the end of the day, it just wasn't enough. A lot of it just wasn't enough, whether it was timing, whether it was, I think, just a lot of the way the story played out, to be honest, is like, I was just looking for more for this episode, man. And this episode, what I will give it, it does have, I don't want to sit here and bash it the whole time, because it is just, quite simply just not a good episode, but there are small, again, every episode had something to it. And what this episode had was, to be honest, some of the better shot things outside of the CGI, some of the better shot things I had seen in the for an MCU TV show. They were making choices that I was wishing they were making a long time ago in some of the earlier episodes. There were some good silhouette shots. There were some real interesting, I think, things that make you wonder who people were, which is funny. It's something that I talked about before, and it just did not exist in some of those earlier episodes, but I'm happy it existed here. Not only that, I think Don Cheadle, Olivia Colman, and all parties involved, really, Samuel Jackson, I think they all did their best with what they had. But again, overall script timing, this episode just was not it. It does turn out to be, I think, very typical finale for an MCU show overall. And those implications and the implications of what could be just don't make you excited. I was really hoping this finale was like, the Marvels is about to come out. You know, I was hoping something, they gave me something that made me excited about that. And it just didn't. I left the episode just completely underwhelmed and not excited really about anything. Quite disappointed in everything at all. So yeah, man, unfortunately, it's just not it. It's not it.
So I understand that if you listen to us on this podcast, that coming in and hearing us talk about something that we're not as enthusiastic about, that we might even potentially bash, is not necessarily a fun listen. I definitely am aware of that, and I understand that, but I have to be completely honest, that is unfortunately going to be the case today from my end and my viewpoint of this series, and especially the finale as a whole. I think that Secret Invasion with this finale has turned in something that is, it's just almost embarrassingly bad at how underwhelming it was, at how illogical it was, at how confounding so many of the choices that were made just from a creative standpoint were in the show, and especially with the final events in this episode. I'm just very confused at how we arrived here, and how after all of this time, and even after some of the self-awareness that the MCU itself has owned up to, especially as it relates to these television series, I'm just really shocked how we ended up here at the most formulaic, the most basic, and really kind of the most lackluster finale out of any show that we've seen thus far. And that's saying a lot, considering that I've only been a big fan of a couple of these television shows. Right. By and large, most of them don't deliver. They're pretty underwhelming, and especially their finales tend to just not be great. And you look at this series and what Secret Invasion could have been and the potential that existed there, especially with the star-studded cast, with the DNA that ties into the comic event storyline that has just been so integral to Marvel storytelling. And you see the output here with this show. It's really an L across the entire board, I think, for Marvel. And I think that this whole MCU television series experiment has to be rethought out. I think that they have to go back to the drawing board completely and rethink this entire thing. To be quite honest, I don't care to watch any more of these. I really don't. Even Loki, which I'm excited for because that is like the best example of what they could do, I'm just kind of apathetic towards it all because I'm losing so much faith in this whole experiment, because not only are their television shows suffering, but we're also starting to just see the quality of the movies dip as well. And when you just look at this whole creative rut that they're in, it really makes you question and wonder, like, what the fuck is going on over there? Like, what's happening? We've talked a lot about the issues, maybe some of the burnout, maybe some of the just the inability to deal with so many projects across the board, and they're probably stretched too thin. I think all of that is likely true. But you look at a finale like this, and it just makes you question and wonder, like, why are we even doing this? What is the point? Did we even need this television series? Because now I'm questioning the necessity of it at all, because after the events of this finale, I'm looking back on it like, it didn't feel like we needed this. It felt like you could have absolutely kept this, maybe rethought it into a different format, maybe called it something differently and not called it Secret Invasion. I think that the whole thing could have just been rethought out from the very get-go. So I'm pretty let down, which, you know, I shouldn't be, because coming into this finale, I kind of expected it to be underwhelming. But when I actually watched it, I couldn't really believe how actively bad it was. That kind of shocked me that it was just so subpar and so substandard to what we're typically used to getting with the MCU. So it's a big disappointment. I think that they have to just go back to the drawing board with this whole MCU television thing in general, and just really ask themselves, like, why are they doing this storytelling? Why are they drawing things out in this format? What's the purpose? And until they figure that out, I'm not really that interested to see much more from them. So that's just kind of my honest take on it. But with all of that out the way, let's get into the details of this week's episode. If you've not seen the season finale or any episodes of Secret Invasion for that matter, this is your official spoiler warning. Go duck out, watch those, and come back and finish out the rest of our conversation. Which means I want to start off with Gaia and Gravik, which is kind of, you know, one of the main central conflicts of this episode. We left off last week's episode with Fury making a call to somebody who we did not know who was going to be that person to essentially come in and help as reinforcements against the fight against Gravik. Turns out it was Gaia. There was no special surprise. It wasn't Captain Marvel. It wasn't Daredevil. It wasn't anybody, you know, that was going to come in for a quick cameo. It was just Gaia. So we essentially get a standoff between who we thought to be Fury in this sequence, him confronting Gravik at New Skrullos, handing over the harvest. They have a big speech between each other. You get a performance by Kingsley Ben-Adir delivering some I would say, some good lines in this moment, some pretty good stuff. And then out of nowhere, big surprise, we find out that it's not Fury, it's actually Gaia. And what happens thereafter is a big CGI battle between the two, in which Gaia is able to inject herself with the Harvest powers, which we know contains the DNA samples of many Avengers and many other heroes all throughout the MCU from the Battle of Earth that took place in Avengers Endgame. And they have this big battle, and you get really, I don't know whether to call it a cornucopia of goodness in terms of just like the power sets that we see, but also at the same time, kind of a confusing display of what's happening here. It's kind of all these things melded together, but there's a sequence and a shot where we kind of see all of the heroes who are a part of this DNA sample. Their names come across the screen. There's over 20 heroes that are displayed here. I won't read everybody. I'll just read a few names just to give us an idea of the DNA that is in this vial that is basically accessible for the uses of Gaia and Gravik in this fight. You have the DNA of Captain America, Corvus Glaive, Captain Marvel, Thanos, Hulk, the Chitauri, Thor, the Winter Soldier, Ghost, Valkyrie, Ebony Maw. There's a lot of heroes that are included in this DNA. And again, that's just a few. There's more that are included in the sample. But I just want to ask you, you know, your thoughts about this fight, your thoughts about the whole sort of dialogue sequence beforehand that Gravik gave to who we thought was Fury that turned out to be Gaia, and just kind of the display of this super scroll. You know, that was one of the things that they were building up into with this entire series in this episode. And we know that there's comic precedence of a scroll taking all these power sets and being able to combine them as one. How did you feel just about the way that they sort of pulled off this entire big action set piece?
Man, where do you even start? So I guess overall, high level, why are we getting another CGI battle between two of the same? I look like you, you look like me, people. Oh my God, we've been doing this since Iron Man 1, Jesus. I can't believe we are here again with the mirror fight, with the... Oh my goodness. I mean, WandaVision, this is just like, I need us to be more self-aware, Marvel. I need us to be more self-aware. We're getting a lot of content, I think, where like, there's a lot of hyper-awareness about who you are, right? We just watched Barbie. Barbie is a very like hyper-aware, we know who we are kind of movie. The MCU has been here far too long not to be as aware as some of these other projects are aware of themselves, because I can't believe we're making the same mistake again for the umpteenth time. It really is frustrating knowing that. Not only that, there's something where even if this fight was to happen, it could have had more gravity behind it, but it doesn't matter because we spent zero time with Gaia. Zero time with Gaia. I mean, like, were we supposed to be like, oh, Gaia's here. Oh, and she beat Gravik. You know what I'm saying? Like, I feel like that's what they wanted from us, but they have not done the work to get us there. They have not done it. We were just talking about how they haven't used Gaia enough at all. And all of a sudden she is made to become the superhero, the main protagonist of this show. And we don't feel it at all. Just like, oh, not only that, they gave these two specific people probably like they became like the most powerful people in the MCU in a second, in the snap of a finger. They became the most. You telling me you got Captain Marvel and Thanos in your body? Skip all the other heroes, right? You got like two of the most broken people of all time in an instant. That is nuts to me. Because now, what? Why are they so overpowered? This is why I was talking about with the vial. All that DNA being in there is weird to me. It doesn't make sense. What's more interesting to me is different scrolls, super scrolls had different powers of different people, because in long story short, that's what Secret Invasion is about, is people that fake Black Panther over there, you know what I'm saying, is fake Black Panther because that's the only powers they got. That's more interesting to me, because in the end you really get to play with stuff, and oh man, it's just another thing. The CGI, I made a very big groan, right? So at first when you find out it's Gaia, right, and you're like, okay, it's Gaia, whatever, and the Hulk arm comes out, I'm like, okay, they're about to fight, right? But Gaia punches Gravik outside And all of a sudden, the scene has changed completely. I groaned right there because it was like a very visible, like, we're about to do the CGI one-on-one thing in the middle of nowhere. We had never seen anything like that in the whole show. You just get punched and you're in a different realm all of a sudden. It looks like, I don't know, Soul Calibur or some shit. It's just like, how do we get here? This is nuts. This is actually insane. So yeah, it's just so frustrating to think that they actually put in the work, one, and two, that they thought we wanted to see another one-on-one copycat CGI battle. It just doesn't make any sense to me, man. I was really hoping for more there. Again, especially, you were just talking about it, the monologue that Gravik is giving right there is good. It's good. Kingsley Benedict, he's giving a decent performance there. He's saying some things I like. I'm like, okay, this is good. And then it just all gets ruined in a punch. It literally is like, they literally punch you out of the scene, quite literally. And it's just frustrating, man. And I wish I didn't see it coming in terms of like the CGI battle thing. I'm like, Secret Invasion is going to be different. No, we fell right back into the same trap. And it's just, yeah, it's annoying. It's annoying.
Well, what makes this even more frustrating is the fact that Marvel, or at least by extension, their writers and the people that they hire, are aware of this. Not even a year ago, the finale of She-Hulk, Attorney at Law, mm-hmm. poked fun at this very thing. The fact that at the end of every Marvel television show, and really a lot of their films as well, you would get this predictable, messy, ugly, big CGI spectacle battle between mm-hmm. two people. She-Hulk Attorney at Law actually pointed that out and made it a point to say, oh, you know what? We're not going to do that. We're going to actively subvert expectations, do something completely different. We're going to be fourth wall breaking. And you have her coming out of the damn Disney Plus tiles on the home screen to visit the offices of Marvel Studios. Like, she literally leaves the show and goes to the real mm-hmm. world. Not even a full year ago, we got that. And this is the first television show properly that we've gotten since She-Hulk Attorney at Law. So I'm coming into this thinking, you know what? Marvel can poke fun at themselves. They can know their mistakes that they've made. They can know and identify the yeah. things that we as an audience don't particularly gravitate towards, you know, in terms of their storytelling and in terms of how they wrap up stuff with their third acts. We know that there have been challenges. There's a long history with that. As you mentioned, it goes all the way back to Iron Man 1. We've been dealing with the same problem. And you would think that there have been actual legitimate learnings from that because they actively pointed it out in their own television show. And here we are, yet again, same result, same conclusion, looks the same, feels the same, mm-hmm. nothing feels important, you don't give a fuck about anybody. Gaia and what Emilia Clarke had to do with this role, this poorly written role, is just like beyond me. I don't know how she was able to really work with any of this material because they didn't do any work for her as a character, so you don't mm-hmm. give any fucks about the fact that she's the one that has to fight and ultimately kill Gravik. And what's even more frustrating is this power set and what they do with all of the combination of this DNA and these powers. First of all, can we just address how are both of them so adept at using these powers? How do they just know how to just so expertly use all these powers? You would think that these heroes mm-hmm. have taken years to master their crafts, but all of a sudden Gaia just can automatically know that Mantis can put people to sleep. Yep, that just that comes crazy. Easily for her. That's just crazy to me. Fucking Gravik just automatically knows that Ebony Maw has telekinetic powers, and so yes. he can just actively easily use that mm-hmm. and deploy that. How did they learn this stuff? Like, were they off studying the power sets of these heroes? If they were, we wouldn't know it mm-hmm. because we weren't given any information or any scenes to build upon that and tell us, like, yeah, they've actually been studying this stuff. And you definitely know Gaia hasn't been studying this shit because she's been preoccupied mm-hmm. with so many other things and her father and the death of him and all of that stuff. Like, we know that just doesn't exist. So we just can illogically say, yeah, now all of a sudden these two, because they have the DNA embedded in their body, they just magically know how to use all these powers. So that's just weird and confounding to me that it's just so effortless for them. You know, that and then the look of it and just like how they actually display this stuff. It's pretty clear where most of the budget for this show went. I think that it was reportedly budgeted at like $211 million, which is just like, it's kind of ridiculous that we're spending that much money on these shows, especially for them to be so bad. But it looks clear and evident to me that they spent the majority of it on this battle. And all of it doesn't even look that great. Some of it looks okay, but then you get like Drax's baby arm flexing on Gaia, which just looks completely weird and just out of place and doesn't fit the tone of this show at all. Like, all of this stuff, man, it was just such a head scratcher. And much like you, I groaned. I was just like, here we go again. I'm totally expecting the same thing that we've seen countless times before, again and again and again. And Marvel, why do you do this when you know that this is a problem and you know that people don't like it? Why do you just actively continue to deploy this tactic and this trope in all of your finales? It's almost like they reshot it, probably, because I would imagine that they conceived of something differently, and for whatever reason, it just didn't work, and they had to arrive to this conclusion. This is the only thing that they knew how to fall back on, and it just doesn't work at all. It's not good. It doesn't look that great, and it's meaningless from an emotional standpoint. What I also want to ask you, too, and you were alluding to this about Gravik in that speech, is the fact that it's also kind of ridiculous that Nick Fury and Gravik in this show, for them to be the two opposing forces, never actually had a real meaningful scene together.
Yep.
Because this is not the Fury, not the real Fury in the scene. It's Gaia posing as Fury.
That's true.
They met each other when Gravik was a young boy, and they've had phone conversations. But for them to be the alpha and the omega of the show, the two people that are the opposing forces that are going at it, that the central conflict is about, we never actually get any scene with them. Fury is relegated to dealing with the imposter Rhodey in a really empty hospital somewhere else, like in a really low stakes situation. How do you feel about the fact that, like, yeah, you know, Gravik gives off this really emotionally resonant dialogue about just how he became Gravik and the body that he took over and why he's making the choices that he's making, for it to not even be the person that he's intending to deliver this message to begin with?
Yeah, it becomes annoying, because even in that moment when you think it's Fury, I think, shoot, Gaia is low-key giving some good, you know what I mean, like, conversation between the two as well. The things they're talking about, Gravik being talking about home, even hit the admittance. Oh my God, this is the most important part. It made me mad that it wasn't Fury in the end. The admittance that he didn't complete the mission, that he couldn't find them a home. And Gravik also looking into the eyes of Fury, who he thinks, again, was his hero, telling him he's his hero and telling him how he let him down. And then it's like, Fury's not going to hear any of this. Fury's never going to hear or listen to any of this. And that's so frustrating for me. And even the coughing that he had going, it was all like good performance too, though. You know what I'm saying? He's coughing. He's like dying in slow motion. You're like, oh my God, this is kind of some decent stuff. And then it's like, psych. It's like the Skrulls were shapeshifting. This show was shapeshifting stuff I didn't want them to shapeshift. You know what I'm saying? It's like, this is not the moment. Why is this the moment? Why are they just kept taking me out of things? And it doesn't make any sense. If you tell me episode one, Fury lands and Gravik is the opposing, you know what I'm saying? Why have we not gotten these real moments with them? Why does Talos in Gravik have a better moment than Fury in Gravik have a better moment? You know what I'm saying? It just doesn't make sense to me. I just don't know where. Even if this, I even wish maybe that meeting happened the episode before. If you're going to do the Gaia thing, you know what I mean? If you're going to do give us that moment. Because that seemed like, it felt like a good moment until you decided to take us out of it. Oh, surprise. It's Gaia. I was like, okay, I guess. You know, it's just weird. I don't know. Weird choices.
I think that they just tried to conceive of so many surprises and shocking elements in the show, because they knew at the top of making this that they did not have all of the heroes in the MCU at their disposal, which we know the comic book storyline, it affects pretty much every hero in the Marvel Universe. They don't have that at their disposal, which is fine. We right. just can't expect that. They know, you know, that's a limitation for television. But in trying to conceive of all of these shocking surprises and these just, you know, weird twists and turns, like, you end up confusing yourself and tying yourself in a knot, because they just pulled the rug out from under us again. And it becomes really difficult to invest yourself into anything, because it's like, well, I don't even know what to believe now. And it's not to a point of being something that's satisfactory. It's to a point of frustration where it's like, well, it might not be who I think it is anyway. So why should I give a fuck? And Fury's not going to hear any of this anyway. And he should be hearing it. He absolutely should be on the receiving end of everything that Gravik is saying, at least to develop and contribute to his arc as a character.
Exactly.
I have so many more thoughts on Fury, but the fact that like he's not present, he doesn't hear any of that shit, he doesn't take away any of those learnings, and can at least start to internalize maybe some of his mistakes, that just becomes like completely ridiculous and a nonsensical choice to me. I know that some of that stuff was communicated earlier in the series via Talos, but that's just one perspective. There's a whole nother side to this that he's just not getting exposure and access to because he's not there. Because Fury actually gets relegated to a backseat story in his own solo series, which is just also kind of wild to me. But that brings us to like the second big thing that I do want to talk about, and that's the standoff in the hospital. Essentially, Fury and Rava and Sonya also want to find out and figure out what's going on with this imposter scroll and what's happening there. And what they're trying to do here, essentially in this scene, is expose Rhodey as an imposter scroll, which is Rava, and we found that out a couple of episodes ago. But what really happens here is a standoff that doesn't have any tension. It doesn't have any real emotional stakes because we already know that Rava is Rhodey. We know that that's been the case the entire time. But also we know that President Ritson is not great. He's kind of an idiot. He's just not a great figurehead as a president, as a leader. And I think the tension that they tried to create and convey in the scene wasn't really there. And it's also like weirdly like the most understaffed hospital in history. Like nobody's around to see any of this. Like nobody is there. I know that some of the guards were killed off, but it's also like, wait, you know, how is this not like a bigger scene and a bigger deal as it should feel? And eventually they are able to expose Rava, who's been impersonating Rhodey. And we'll get to Rhodey as well. And just like the timeline and how that relates to this whole thing as well. But what did you think about this particular scene that, you know, Sonya, she's present. We get Olivia Coleman back, but she has like one line in the sequence. She's just kind of like a bystander. And Fury is really kind of spending all of his time and effort in trying to expose Rhodey as this imposter scroll.
Yeah, at first it was fine just because Olivia Coleman. I just like her. I just like seeing her take out people. I think it's always interesting. But like you said, she doesn't have much to do, and here comes we come here again, this damn hospital, man. We spent a decent amount of time at this hospital. We're back here again at this hospital trying to, this weird again standoff, trying to figure out if the president is gonna believe Fury or not about that he's standing right next to the scroll. It's just, I don't know, man. I think I'm just looking for more in general higher stakes. I think also, what's weird about this is what doesn't help this thing is the everything that Gravik is made to set up as a character has just fizzled out completely by this point, right? Versus, again, episode one, I'm kind of in it a little bit. You know what I'm saying? He just blew up some people. Maria Hill's gone. He ends up killing Talos eventually. And I think I'm just looking for a bigger threat at the end of all this. And I'm like, I think I know how this ends. You know, like as soon as the standoff happens, it's like the fake Rhodey, Skrull Rhodey is going to end up getting shot. You know what I'm saying? Or like, I don't know. I just feel like I knew how it was going to go down. I think it's frustrating because I feel like that threat wasn't really there. Because I didn't feel like it was never really a moment where I was like, uh-oh, the president might believe Skrull Rhodey here. You know, I don't know. I never got any of that sense. And it makes for sad watching. It makes for like a boring watch. I think at that point, again, especially we're just talking in the hallway, really not about much. And then we go move to the president Ritson, which turns out to be an asshole, but it all comes out in such a, again, an underwhelming way, man. I wish there was like some seeds leading up to that point to tell us how bad of a person he was, or like you telling me Fury kind of spent time with this guy, a decent amount of time with him, right? And didn't know he was like this until now, or like, I don't know. It's just like, give me more. It just wasn't enough. There's not enough breadcrumbs. There's not enough to get me excited on that moment about the little standoff. It's just not enough. And I wish they had taken a different approach with all of that. I don't know what it looks like, but it wasn't that. It wasn't another hospital scene of us doing this. It wasn't.
Yeah, the whole scene as it was constructed was just such a cliche. Just a standoff, their guns pointed at each other. Oh, he's a Skrull. No, I'm not. Don't believe him, President Ritson. I'm your right-hand man. Uh-oh, like, we're supposed to be invested in that? Like, I could care less. Like, we know what's going to happen. We know that Rob is going to be exposed as a Skrull. And I'm just sitting there wondering, like, fucking Fury, shoot this person. Shoot this Skrull. Like, you did all of that to ultimately shoot Rava in the head by the end of the sequence. We see that she dies. Why not do that 3 minutes before? Just shoot her. Just shoot her and expose her. Shoot her in the arm, shoot her in the gut, shoot her in the fucking leg, because you ultimately killed her by the end of it anyway. Like, why do we draw it out for such a long time to try to create this fake tension, because there's no real tension here? Nobody cares about Ritson as a president. We also know that in a year's time, or whenever that movie comes out, that Ritson's going to be replaced, and they actively call that out in this episode. You know, Fury's like, yeah, that's real one-term president stuff. That's super on the nose. Mm-hmm. Like, we're expecting all of this to not carry over in any meaningful way, which, you know, to your point about Ritson actually being an asshole, like, I think that I would have actually been impacted by it more if I knew that he was going to remain president. Like, if I actually knew that his term was going to last and have these profound effects, and the possibility that maybe he gets reelected. Maybe that's a big part of his campaign to get people really behind him, like fear-mongering, getting people afraid, therefore they actually vote for him to be president. But that's not going to be the case, because we know that Harrison Ford is coming in Captain America 4. Like, that's going to be a thing. So the whole tension is undercut by that. It's undercut by the fact that Rhodey and this imposter Skrull that was revealed episodes ago. So us as an audience, we're already ahead of the characters. Mm-hmm. We're already ahead of Ritson in this fact, and we know that there's going to be only one logical conclusion anyway. And the fact that they just like drew it out for as long as they did, it just doesn't make any sense. It's just like, it's a weird choice. I do want to talk about this Rhodey thing, because by the end of the episode, we see where Rhodey and even Martin Freeman as Everett Ross, they were held captive, which we expected. Some laboratory, they were held captive, you know, just being, you know, sort of tended upon, and that's where their bodies were while they were being, you know, sort of perpetrated as Skrulls this entire time. And this hasn't been like 100% officially affirmed, but a lot of signs point to this, that apparently Rhodey has been a Skrull since the events of Captain America: Civil War. Because if you look at that scene, when you see Rhodey wake up, the real Rhodey, he's still in a hospital gown. And as he tries to leave his chamber, which he's been confined to, he kind of stumbles out, which would point to the fact that his legs were recently paralyzed, as we know that they were in Captain America: Civil War when he suffered, you know, those almost fatal wounds at the battle at the airport. And the creator himself of this show kind of says, like, yeah, we kind of point to the fact that it's been a while that Rhodey has been a Skrull, that he's been, you know, sort of impersonated as. And so that would mean that the Rhodey we saw in Avengers Infinity War, the Rhodey that we saw in Avengers Endgame, the Rhodey that we saw in The Falcon and the Winter Soldier, that entire time would point us and lead us to the fact that this was Rava and not the real Rhodey. What say you about that? Because that certainly changes a lot in terms of a contextual standpoint, in terms of our understanding of Rhodey and the important and pivotal role that he sort of played in some of those events, especially Avengers Endgame. How do you feel about that choice and the fact that, you know, for the better part of, I think canonically in the timeline, probably like 10 years, maybe 10 years?
Yeah, it's a long time.
Rava has been impersonating Rhodey this entire time.
It is. Man, I don't even know how to really, I still haven't really wrapped my mind around it, to be honest. Especially, you know, you bring up Endgame was such a, Rhodey was one of our champions, right? Rhodey was one of our people who also did not get snapped. And so he was a part of that task force trying to get the world back together. I guess you could argue he was still in good graces, because that means half the Skrulls got snapped too. You know what I'm saying? So I guess you could argue that he was in good graces, because he was legit and honestly trying to get his people back as well, or their people back as well. And you know, I don't know, it's just because there were other I think close moments, you know, where you just feel like that's the Rhodey we know. And I don't know, now I'm afraid to watch back in context, because I feel like it's going to take away from the whole thing. Part of me just wants to keep it separate. Part of me just wants to be like, he was only a Skrull in this show. And I think that's how I have to view it. You know what I'm saying? I think that's how I have to look at it. Because if not, it's going to make me constantly side-eye everything that's happening. In like you said, pretty much within the past 10 years. So, yeah, I kind of want to keep it separate. Another thing about it, I didn't think about the post-Civil War thing as to why he was like, he came out the chamber limping. Because in my mind, I was like, wouldn't everybody else be limping too? I don't know. That's what I thought. I was like, oh, why isn't everyone else being helped out of this thing? They all just kind of yawned and walked out the room. I was like, dang, is that it? Not only that, but why is Agent Ross like, how long have you been here? What do you mean how long? I just don't understand. Do you know when you got here? Why are you asking him how long he's been here? I thought that was such a weird line, looking over and be like, oh, how long have you been here, Colonel Rhodes?
Also, like, where are we? Where the fuck am I right now? That should be your first question.
How long have I been here? Ask yourself that question. Like, I thought that was so strange that he asked that. It threw me completely off. I was like, what? It's like, the writing, they're obviously trying to draw attention, right, to what everything you're talking about. To, oh my God, how long have you been here? But, like, you should be asking yourself that question. And then have somebody else, you know, it was just weird to me. So, yeah, I think overall, contextually, I think I'll have to separate the two in my mind. Like, that's our Rhodey is in all the other movies. Skrull Rhodey just happens to be in this random secret invasion. This show's already not good anyway. So, like, you throw the show away, is it going to mean anything? You know what I'm saying? Does it matter really at the end of the day where Rhodey was in all of this? You know, but again, if you watch back, it is going to be like, huh, why is Rava so nice? You know what I'm saying? Why is Rava an Avenger and attempting to bring all these people together? Why? What is the motivations? And so I think I will watch that context one time. And then after that, I'll be like, ah, who cares? And I'll throw it away.
Yeah, I think to speak to the Everett Ross point and just that line, that was just lazy, basic writing, because they knew that they had to answer and address that question. And that mm-hmm. was the only way that they came up with, was just like, that just felt, just construct another scene, like do something later, you know, like catch up with them later as sort of an epilogue to talk about that. I mean, that would be nobody's first question mm-hmm. coming out of a chamber in a situation like that. But with Rhodey and the timeline, you know, and this whole thing, again, a lot of people do suspect it's Civil War. And I think the creator started to allude to it that it might be Civil War, but it also feels like that nobody officially is confirming it. Mm-hmm. Maybe as a means to try to still develop an out if they want to. On one hand, I'll say this: if it does go back to Civil War, a part of me does kind of like that, just because mm-hmm. it is a bigger swing to say, yeah, he's been a Skrull for this entire time, as opposed to, oh, he just recently got kidnapped, right, and so it's conveniently placed for this show. So a part of me appreciates trying to create at least a substantial amount of time to where the Rhodey that we always thought we knew and believed was our true Rhodey was mm-hmm. not that person. On the other hand, though, it does create a lot of problems for Marvel and just for the way that people will contextualize and maybe perhaps revisit some of those things, because the real Rhodey, theoretically, if this is the Civil War Rhodey that has not been around for such a long time, he wouldn't know that Iron Man is dead, his best friend. Like, Tony Stark is gone. Ooh. He would not know that. He was not present for that entire situation, which then calls back to the scene in Avengers Endgame when Tony Stark is about to die. And you see how overcome with emotion that mm-hmm. Rhodey is in that scene. He's the first person to approach Tony, and then Spider-Man approaches him before ultimately Pepper is mm-hmm. the last one to have those final moments with Tony before he dies. It's like, well, Rava, you feel pretty close to Tony for somebody who doesn't really have a relationship with him. How did that happen? Maybe Rava, in having sort of a relationship with him from Civil War, can start to develop those emotions for Tony and feel for him as a person, right? But also, because this becomes a slippery slope when you really start to think about it, mm-hmm. how is the personality shift in this show so fucking strong? How does Rava become such an asshole mm-hmm. in this show, where you look at her in Avengers Infinity War and Endgame, and it's like, yeah, Rhodey kind of makes some questionable choices, but like, never just a blatant asshole, and ultimately fights on behalf of the Avengers to save the universe and to save all of humanity. Like, you never got any sense that Rava was this headstrong, willing to sacrifice anybody and any person on behalf of Gravik and the fight that they're after. You never got a sense of that until this show, because the personality shift that happens here, especially mm-hmm. as it relates to the stuff that we saw between Rhodey and Fury, like this entire time, she's willing to blackmail him. She's willing to throw him under the bus at any turn, ultimately on behalf of Gravik and the fight that's happening here. So it just becomes like really head scratching and kind of confusing when you start to like pull it all together. Yeah. And I gotta give them some leeway, because look, as storytellers,
it's hard.
You can't retcon everything. You can't make everything make mm-hmm. sense, but there's also continuity, and you have to really ask yourself these questions like, well, how do we actually visually map this out? How do we explain this to people when it comes time to do that? And perhaps they can, and perhaps they will, and perhaps, mm-hmm. you know, I don't know, maybe in the future with Armor Wars, with that movie, maybe that can shed some light on this stuff. You know, mm-hmm. if they create or include some sequences to where we can see it from a different vantage point, mm-hmm. like we can see Rava acting as Rhodey from the vantage point of the events of Infinity War and Civil War, or yeah, that could be good material if they go there. But if they don't go there, if they just leave it where it is, then that feels like it won't lead us to an emotional place of how we should feel about this as strongly as we should feel about this as I think that they intended it to be. So part of me has to reserve reservation, but I have a lot of questions about it in general. But that leads to like the last big storyline, which is kind of like the wrap up of the show and just like where we leave off with Fury, which I mean, just so many questions and thoughts about this. But by the end of this, Fury leaves Earth and goes back to Saber, and him and Priscilla, they're able to kind of mend the fences between their conflict and reach a place of agreement. And she ultimately goes back with him on Saber, and she's willing to help him out, at least for the time being, in this conflict, in this battle between the Kree and the Skrulls, and just the events that are happening on Earth. But simultaneously, alongside this, President Ritson, as you said, reveals himself to just be kind of a monstrous figure, because he has now enacted this worldwide hunt for the remaining Skrulls on Earth. And we get what I felt like was actually a pretty impactful scene in terms of people attacking Skrulls, pulling up on the newscasters at the broadcast and just shooting them in cold blood.
Yep.
You get people just, you know, mugging and killing and murdering Skrulls on the street, sometimes incorrectly so, because they don't necessarily know who's a Skrull and who's not. They're just making assumptions. I thought it was a pretty impactful scene, but it also kind of leaves some questions to be desired in terms of like, well, why didn't we build up to this to begin with? Why didn't we talk about this paranoia on Earth with humans and how they relate to Skrulls? All of that stuff is, you know, sort of, you know, included at the end here. But then, you know, again, in addition to that, Fury, Priscilla, they decide to leave Earth and try to do what they can on behalf of Skrulls, you know, and they're able to, you know, sort of patch up their conflict between each other. So I have more thoughts about this stuff. But what did you think about just kind of this resolution in terms of like where we leave the state of Earth, where we leave the state of the Skrulls, and ultimately Fury kind of ending the show exactly how he started off as in the beginning of it?
So the Ritson stuff pissed me off, because not because it was bad, but because it didn't happen earlier. You know how fucking cool of a show and paranoia being raised like that, all of this would have been. This is like episode two. You know what I'm saying? Like if OK, episode one happens, whatever. Gravik blows up stuff. You know what I'm saying? Episode two. Skrulls are then revealed, right? Something happens where like a camera caught a Skrull turning into Nick Fury or something. I don't know. Something happens. And then Ritson, we found out he's an asshole early, but now there's like a hunt for these Skrulls, and people are like banding together, finding out these officials and Skrulls, and people are getting shot in the middle of the street. And it was violent too. That's what I liked. I was like, damn, people are getting fucked up. That's a TV show. That's like, okay, we have basis to do a lot here. Now the paranoia is here. You don't know who anybody is. Somebody can get shot at any time. I was just frustrated that it happened so late in the show. It didn't happen that early as I'm talking about. You know what I'm saying? But it could have happened earlier, because that's the paranoia I think I was looking for in Secret Invasion. It's like everybody being like, who the what? There's these people among us. We don't know who they are. That's what I was looking for. And so that's what made me frustrated after seeing it. I was like, dang, I like this scene. Why are we just now doing this? Not only that, but what are the implications now? This thing wasn't resolved. Is this going to carry over into another TV show? You know what I'm saying? Where is that moving to? Where is that energy being directed towards? It can't wait to Secret Invasion season two. We don't have time for that. Earth is right here, right now. All of our heroes, most of them, are on Earth. What is this carrying over to the Thunderbolts? You know what I'm saying? Like, what is the play here? And so I didn't like that either, because they not only introduced, I think, what could have been a really cool plot point at the beginning of the show, they don't resolve it and tell us where it's going. It's so weird to me. It's like, what? It also felt a little, X-Men-y too. You know what I'm saying? It's like, oh, the X-Men are here. It's almost like, it almost felt like it was time for the president to make Sentinels. You know what I'm saying? It was like, oh shit. And I'm sure that's going to come eventually, right? But it's like, I don't know. It was just very weird that happened at the end there. And again, you can do it at the end, but tell us the direction. And it felt like there was no direction there, especially when we move to Priscilla in Fury, where it's like, Fury's like, I need your help. First of all, Marvel has a good, not a good job. that have a bad job of writing one-liners to make you just be like, okay, this thing happened. They were like, Fury's like, oh, the Kree are ready for peace talks. What? Where? All of a sudden, in the snap of a finger, the Kree are ready for peace talks, and we're just supposed to believe them. Like, all right, I guess everything is going to be good now. The Kree are ready for peace talks. And then, not
at the
only
end
that,
of the fucking show.
At the end finally, of the show.
Finally, they're ready to have peace talks. Okay.
We can't at least see some of that. You know what I'm saying? We can't, like, the Kree-Skrull War is this big thing, and we've always kind of, like, loomed over it for the most part versus, like, really feeling it. Even Captain Marvel, they try to give us a sense of it, but I feel like the show should have been part continuation of that, and we don't get it. And then, surprise, the Kree are ready. And it's like, oh, that is so weird, man. It's such a weird choice for that to be a one-liner, because that's a very important thing. It's like the MCU is afraid to give us political outside of the heroes that we know. Like, Kree and Skrulls can be made to be interesting, but it's like they won't give them the chance to be interesting. That annoyed me a lot. And then Priscilla is made to go it with Fury instead of she's like, ah, my fight is here, but I'm gonna go with you anyway. What? why say that line and then still get on the ship? It's crazy. She's like, oh, well, I'll help you start. I wish they just picked one. I wish it was like, sorry, I have to stay here, versus I'll help you start. I wish she would have just picked one, not both, because now, to me, that's weird for her character to quite literally give up time on Earth not helping her people versus going with Fury to help her people. It's like, pick one. Because both, to me, make sense. Both to me is like, both Fury needs your help and that's your husband. You know what I'm saying? And people need you here on Earth because you're like the best liaison they have. Both make sense. So pick one. They were like, we're going to kind of go with both. I didn't like that either. It was like, I don't know, man. It was a very mixed bag of an ending, because it's like some of the stuff has potential, but it's so messy that it just ends up falling apart completely. So yeah, it's annoying. Again, I'm saying annoying a lot, but yeah, it was annoying.
You know, outside of the stuff you've already sort of noted with Ritson and just the lack of any sort of buildup to this war on the Skrulls and the paranoia that exists on Earth, what really pissed me off about this whole epilogue and just the whole wrap up to this series is the fact that Fury is back exactly where he began. He's going back to Saber to hide out on this satellite space station ship. And the Skrulls that he's been meaning to help back on Earth have ended up worse off than they were at the top of the show. Motherfuckers are getting mowed down in the street at Fox News broadcasts. Like, it's way worse, and you're just gonna leave? You're just bouncing now? Peace. How does that make any sense? This is supposed to be at least somewhat of a heroic figure. And I know, based off of everything we've seen in the show at this point, they are attempting to deconstruct the mythos around Fury and the invincibility of him as a character, which I think that they also fumbled, because now looking back on everything that we saw, all those conversations, the way that Talos would tear him down, everybody's calling him washed and old and out of step and you're not the same person. Like, we did all of that. I understood that they were trying to essentially go after something like Unforgiven. They were trying to give him a Clint Eastwood sort of aspect, like this guy who's out of time,
right,
and comes back to a new world that he doesn't quite understand. But what they forgot to do, which is really important, is to still show why he's an untouchable badass, because that's what they did in Unforgiven.
Yep.
You still saw Clint Eastwood by the end of that movie be somebody to not fuck with. He was still unfuckwittable, even though he was older. They didn't do that for Fury. He was absolutely out of touch and out of step and behind the curve and didn't really know how to solve this issue. And then he just leaves. What is the fucking character arc here? What does he learn? What does he grow and develop into based off of all the stuff that's happened within the show? So many people died. So many people got sacrificed. People close to him, like Talos and Maria Hill. What did that ultimately do to inform his character? I'd venture to say nothing. The best stuff that they did from a character standpoint was the interactions and the dynamic between him and Priscilla.
Yep.
I would venture to say that this is a really good story about marriage and matrimony and love. within a very bad show about Skrulls and the peacekeeping conflict between Kree and Skrulls and the invasion of Earth and refugee and all of the political stuff that they tried to introduce, they failed at that stuff. That stuff doesn't really work outside of a few conversations that they don't take anywhere or develop into anything that's actually meaningful. The stuff between him and Priscilla, it's well acted. It's done very good, you know, from the standpoint of a performance aspect. Samuel L. Jackson, Charlaine Woodard, they do a good job of taking that material and actually getting you to believe into their love and their romance and how there's just challenges and there's ebbs and flows and the fact that you never really love somebody the entire time you're married to them. There's points in times where you might fall out of love. There's points in times where that love changes and adjusts and it grows and it becomes something different. And sometimes you just like look past like what something might have previously been to develop and evolve into who you are now and accepting of each other. Like, I like those ideas, but they introduced her so late that we don't get enough time to develop that stuff from her standpoint. And also, Fury just completely negates all of his other responsibilities that he has to this creep, that he has to the Skrull people. And people have been telling him this entire time, especially Talos, Gravik. They're like, bro, you failed us. You didn't do what you said you were going to do for us. And he still decides to leave at the end of it. He still decides to just shake and go back to Saber. And that's just so crazy to me. That just does not make any fucking sense at all. Like, I don't know what the goal was here. Like, did they just completely want us to not feel any sorts of heroism with Fury? Like, if that was the goal, I guess mission accomplished. But also, like, it's still Nick Fury, bro. Like, there's still 15 years worth of stuff that led up to this that would show us and lead us to believe, yeah, he did some really questionable shit. Yeah, he's probably the master manipulator, but he's still a hero at the end of the day. Mm-hmm. He makes some questionable, morally ambiguous choices, but he's still fighting alongside the Avengers and Tony Stark and Steve Rogers. Like, that just doesn't add up to how we got here. Like, and you can't fucking just say, oh, the blip. Like, no, fuck that. Mm-hmm. Like, that's just not good enough because you didn't do anything to show us how this actually impacted this guy. So I just didn't like that. Like, if this is just like a show about how old Nick Fury is, like, then why are we calling it a secret invasion? Just do a Nick Fury. Just call it that. Do something else. Like, I don't get this. It's just so weird to me. So I don't know, you know, to your point, where this goes, how they resolve it, because the end of this would lead us to believe that this is to be like a multi-film or multi-show arc. This is a huge Earth scale conflict now.
Exactly.
That a lot of the Earthbound heroes should probably be involved in. Mm-hmm. And are they actually going to be? Doesn't feel like it. Doesn't look like it. The most recent trailer of the Marvels doesn't feel like it has anything to do with this stuff. It feels like it might go elsewhere. Captain America, is he going to be dealing with this? I don't know. We're already talking about Incredible Hulk stuff and those connections and Thunderbolts. Like, where does that tie in? I'd love to know because it doesn't seem all that clear. As we approach like the final thoughts on this conversation, as we wrap up here, one thing I want to ask you about, you know, this whole show before we get to our rankings, I'm hesitant to play Monday morning quarterback here, but I feel like we kind of have to. Do you feel that this entire show, this entire series, Secret Invasion, was ill-conceived from the very get-go? Just knowing that they could not match the scale and the ambition of the comic book storyline, knowing that they could not have all of the heroes like Robert Downey Jr. and Chris Evans and Chris Hemsworth. Like, we couldn't get all those people back because you just can't afford that necessarily for a TV show. But was this ill-conceived? Should it have been something else? Should it have been maybe an entire phase of storytelling, perhaps, because of just the scale and the ambition? I know it was not ever going to be that, but I don't know. I feel like even with previous storylines that have made deviations like Civil War or Infinity War, though they were still very different from their comic book counterparts, I felt like they still maintained the spirit of what those stories were. Like, we still got the sense that it was Civil War, even though it was like a slightly smaller scale in the movie, or even Infinity War. Yep. There were a lot of characters that weren't included in that were in the comics, but it still maintained the spirit of what that was. This is something really different entirely. Outside of a few key hallmarks, Super Skrulls, that type of stuff, this doesn't really resemble the comic book storyline at all. Should this have just been conceived as something else entirely?
You know, it's a really good question, especially because I think the track record of changing the most important comic book storylines that we have in Marvel, that translation has been done pretty well. You just said it, Civil War. It's done pretty well. Everyone understands the Sokovia Accords, I think, you know, for the most part. You got to change some things. Spider-Man isn't as old as he is in the comic. You know what I'm saying? Like, all of that stuff works, you know, for the most part. A lot of that stuff is pretty good. Infinity War in general Thanos, all of that looks different from the comic, but the DNA, the base, what the way it's made us to feel, a lot of that works. It feels the same as the comic. A lot of that is like comic book fans looked at it and we could clap. We can go, yes, good job. You did that in a good cinematic level, big epic event. I feel like the energy into Secret Invasion was, that's the thing that felt inconceived from the beginning. Not the, I think, ambition to do it, but like you said, the form is not correct. You can't tell me we have a whole Infinity Saga for the Infinity, you know what I'm saying? And you give me a Secret Invasion TV show, which, again, it, at first I was like, okay, this is fine. Six episodes, some of them being 30 minutes, some of them, you have to put that energy in if you're going to do a big storyline. All of the other storylines had energy. This doesn't have it. This doesn't have, part of me wishes they should just did like a, do a movie, do a animated movie. You know what I'm saying? Switch it up. Maybe like, if you're going to switch it up as much as they switch it up here, maybe just do an animated movie and keep it moving. Cause maybe you have room to do some things in that movie. You know what I'm saying? You have some things to work with, some different characters to play with. Cause then you don't have to go get a whole Chris Evans, you know what I'm saying? You can get some voices going on here. You can say, hey, step into the voice box with us for a little bit. You can maybe bring back some of those people. You got them for What If? You could probably get them for an animated movie. You know what I'm saying? I might have rather seen that. I would have went to the theaters to see Secret Invasion, the animated film in theaters. It might have been really fucking cool, actually, if that was to happen. So it just feels like that the energy of all of it was not the same. And I don't know 100% why that is, why you look at Civil War and go, well, let's put in the energy. Why you look at the Infinity Saga in general and all of that and say, okay, let's put that energy in. Shoot, there's smaller other things they put the energy into. I feel like Daredevil Born Again being whatever, 23 episodes, however many episodes they're about to come out with, that's already more energy than they're putting into the comic line of Secret Invasion. It is, I just don't get where it is. Like, why every other storyline getting the, I can kind of feel, you know what I'm saying? All the other storylines, I can kind of feel where they're going. Like, yeah, okay, I see the money behind that. I see the time behind that. And then Secret Invasion comes along. They're like, eh, here's some Nick Fury. You're going to get a couple scrolls. Yeah, this last episode is going to be like 30 minutes. Episode before that's like 30 minutes. You're going to get, you know, I don't get it. It feels weird. So, yeah, it's definitely, again, the idea of creating Secret Invasion is not ill-conceived, but the energy behind it, that's the ill-conceived part. That's the, what are we doing? What were we looking to do? Especially when you've seen all that other stuff work. What made you think this six-episode thing was going to work? Even the way you manipulate it. It doesn't make any sense to me.
Yeah, trust me. I am the last guy that will sit here and be like, yeah, I want the comic book storyline translated one for one to the big screen. Like, I would never say that. I love what they did with Civil War. I love the changes that they made for Infinity War. You have to do what's best for the story that you're telling, and you have to do what's best for the medium. And if we're just being completely honest about it, the expectations when it comes to TV and or cinematic films, it's higher than what it would be in comic books. Like, there is a bigger and larger expectation because there is so much money behind it. There are so many high profile stars behind it. There is so much time and effort that's going to be put into it. And so coming into Secret Invasion, I'm fine with you calling it that if you can at least make me feel as if it's important as it should be as it relates to the larger tapestry and the storytelling that you're going to tell within this entire MCU landscape. Mm-hmm. Because you don't have to have Iron Man or Captain America or Black Widow or Hulk included in the show for it to feel important. But what are you going to do to make it feel important? And they started off pretty well. They started off in a solid spot with the murder of a lot of people at the hands of Gravik, the revelation that there were a million Skrulls living on Earth that we never knew about. Those were nuggets that actually started to lead me to believe, like, oh my God, they're trying to like really blow this out and take this to another level and make this feel really large scale, but they never actually go anywhere with that stuff. They never have ever actually take it to the next level because we just continue to go back to these ideas and to these themes that they just never fully developed and they never actually resonate because they don't put in the time and the investment and the effort to make it feel as important as it should. There's no reason that this should have been constructed the way that it is. Like, if it's not just a single movie, then make it a multi movie arc. You can do that. You have so many options. This could be a phase of storytelling. This mm-hmm. could be multiple shows and tell mm-hmm. us that from the get-go. Tell us that there's going to be multiple seasons of Secret Invasion. We came into this believing and hearing that this might be the MCU's version of Andor. First of all, it sure the fuck ain't. It ain't even close. That is the furthest comparison that you can make.
Yeah.
But at least with Andor, at least with that idea of a show, mm-hmm. knowing that it's a prequel to Rogue One, knowing that it's telling a story that's going to take place over the course of 5 years, they were upfront about it. They were like, Andor is going to be 2 seasons, 12 episodes each, 24 episodes, which are all about a strong hour. And we're going to be taking time jumps. We're going to do multi-episode mm-hmm. arcs. Do that. Just do that. Tell us that from the get-go if that's the plan, but clearly that's not the plan. So why? Why reduce it to such a low level? Why reduce it to such low stakes? Why take it down so many notches and make it feel so insignificant mm-hmm. to the rest of the stuff that you're doing? Because we're prioritizing the multiverse shit, which honestly is not really working to begin with anyway. Like, mm-hmm. you've had some highlights, but people are becoming kind of fed up and tired of that. Like, what's the thinking here? Like, how did we get here, and how do these conversations actually take shape and inform what we're doing here? And I just go back to that idea that we've explored with the previous episode and now this episode, that it feels like the way it was initially constructed with Secret Invasion dramatically changed throughout the production. Something happened, I don't know what, but maybe it's the rumor about the Russian tie-in with the politics and the Ukraine stuff, like that's affecting real world stuff. I've heard rumors about that they had something that, you know, alluded to that. But I would once again ask, like, well, why are you so shy about that stuff? Why are you so mm-hmm. afraid to yeah. tackle stuff, even though it just might be coincidental? Like, yeah, there's obviously a real world conflict happening and it's terrible, but that's not going to make me feel any differently about the show. Like, it's not going to make me feel better about the real conflict happening in the mm-hmm. world. Like, exactly. That shit's going to happen regardless. And I feel like they did the same thing with the Falcon and the Winter Soldier. There were rumors about a pandemic storyline with that they took out. And
yep.
that's where the Flag Smasher bullshit came into play. Mm-hmm. Like, man, I don't know. It's really frustrating when you see just the lack of attention and time that felt like it was put into the show. And I know people worked hard on it, but the end result just doesn't reflect that. And that's really unfortunate. As we wrap up here, final thoughts, you know, your sort of final closing addendum on this show, you know, where you stand with it. And ultimately, you know, where would you rank it amongst the other MCU series that we've gotten? Again, I think that this is the ninth one. Mm-hmm. We've gotten Loki and WandaVision and Ms. Marvel and Moon Knight. You know, where would you place this alongside those other shows?
Yeah. So this show, I was quite notably excited for. I felt like the marketing leading up to it was pretty good. I like the dark undertones that they really had. I remember the first poster with Nick Fury with his patch off, and he's just, you know, his eyes slash, and it's just like, oh yes, this is the energy I'm looking for. This dark but very, I think, concentrated to espionage Marvel thing that I thought it could be, man. And I thought it was going to be made for all of these surprises. At the top of all this, you're telling, I mean, they were naming actors and actresses out the wazoo that I was very excited to get, man. I mean, all of them are good, and it fell short, I think, of all those expectations. And I think part of me really wanted an MCU TV show win, right? We kind of talk about how a lot of these have been underwhelming. Not necessarily train wrecks, right? A lot of them are just underwhelming. Not what we're expecting, especially with the we know the greatness that the MCU can bring. And Secret Invasion, again, at the top, felt like it might be a shift in something. It wasn't going to be as funny. It wasn't going to be as quippy. It wasn't going to be this over-the-head CGI thing, you know, kind of going on. It was going to be about the politics. And it was going to be made to be a show, a drama show, I think, that we could feel and be looking for things and I don't know, just be excited to watch. And at the end of it, it falls into itself. It falls into all the things that the MCU, when they mess up, it falls into all of those things. It did fall into comfortability. It did fall into we're not taking enough swings. It did fall into just man, why aren't we putting enough time into our TV shows? Especially when they can constantly tell us that all of these are important. They are part of the MCU. Why is the same energy not being put into these TV shows, man? And so overall, I think, of course, I was looking for more, right? But not only was I looking for more, but it has definitely became, I think, probably my least favorite experience out of these MCU shows. And that being said, it quite literally is in my, I think, my last spot for all MCU shows. And I think only thing right above it is Captain America and the Winter Soldier. And I think what so one of the legs up that Captain America and the Winter Soldier has is it wasn't afraid to kind of have some of those conversations, right? It at least had some of those surface level, like, uh-oh, y'all talking about some real shit. What's happening here? Not only that, but it has a conclusion that it can say, oh, this show was just to see us, Sam, become Captain America. At least it had something to it, right? You literally just got done talking about, what arc did Nick Fury have? Did he learn anything? He didn't even hear Gravik give the goddamn biggest speech to tell him about his hero and how he felt. We thought at first, I was like, Nick Fury is admitting he's wrong about something. Nope, it was Gaia. You know what I'm saying? So like, I stand here disappointed because I feel like out of all the MCU shows too, this is the one that feels like you don't got to watch it because nothing really changed. You know, nothing really, unless they do something with all of the Skrull stuff, unless they do that happened at the end of the finale, unless they do something with all of that, it feels all kind of empty. It left me quite literally wanting so much more, man. So of course I'm very disappointed in this show. Again, it sits on my last spot, and it is time for Marvel to reevaluate these TV shows. I think completely, either reevaluate them completely or study more intently what made the best so good. Study what made Loki so good. Study what made WandaVision a spectacle when it came out and everybody was watching it. Study the reasons in which what made those TV shows interesting, because everything else is falling quite literally under the bus right now. And it's just sad, man. It is just sad because I think the format has potential, but they're not putting the energy, I think, to get us there. So, yeah, man, I'm not looking forward to the next MCU shows. Because, bro, you know how I feel about Ironheart. If Ironheart is, I will throw, what? I will fight Marvel if they do this to Ironheart. I can't, y'all can't do Riri like this, dog. You can't, you just can't. It will break me. I cannot see Riri in this light, man. So I'm hoping they get it together, and I'm hoping the future of these MCU shows, if they continue to do them, I'm hoping the future is brighter.
I will just start and get this out the way. This show is dead last for me out of the nine that we've gotten. It's the worst example of what they've done, and the finale is again on a very, very embarrassingly bad level in terms of the other finales that we've gotten, and most of them have not been good, and that's saying a lot for this show. I think that there have been highlights with this show. There have been moments that I've enjoyed. We've noted them across our reviews of each of these episodes. There have been some really important conversations, some decent writing, some really, really strong performances on the part of this absolutely star-studded cast, from Samuel Jackson to Olivia Colman to Ben Mendelsohn, Dermot Mulroney, Don Cheadle. Like, you have really, really incredible talent here. And they stepped up and did what they could with the material and the acting, but the story and the larger narrative here didn't service them at all. It is almost a crime what they did to characters like Nick Fury, or what they even did with new characters like Gaia on the part of Emilia Clarke, and what they've done with Don Cheadle. It's just unacceptable. And I'll just end and reiterate my initial thoughts at the top of this episode that I don't want them to green light or produce any more of these television shows until they can really sit down and think about, why are we doing this? Mm-hmm. What's the point of this story? Why are we wanting to tell this story right now? Is Disney Plus the right platform for this? Is six episodes the right amount of episodes for this? Likely the answer is no, because there's yet to be a case where six episodes, I think, has completely worked for them. Mm-hmm. I don't know why they continue to do this, and then you just all of a sudden give us this whiplash effect and say Daredevil Born Again is going to be 18. We're going to double that. What's the leap in logic there? How can you just easily greenlight 18 episodes, but we're not giving any more runway to these six-episode series? We're not getting 8 episodes, 9 episodes, 10 episodes. I think they have to ask all these questions and ask, is this going to strengthen the stories that we're telling? Is it going to serve a larger narrative or purpose within the saga that we're actually exploring? Is it going to actually fulfill and answer questions about characters that we as an audience have a desire and an appetite to explore and to tap into? And if you can't check those boxes, then I don't want to fucking see it. And I really don't want to watch any more of these. I don't even want to review any more of these, if I'm being completely honest, because we're becoming broken records at this point. We say the same thing every single time. Finale's not good. Not enough episodes. Episodes aren't long enough. Why haven't we gotten more development and time with this character? Mm-hmm. Why haven't you decided to create a scene and really give us a relationship with this person or this person? We keep doing this. And it's been going on for almost 3 years now. And so what the fuck is the point, really? Like, what are we doing? And then you look to the future. You mentioned Ironheart. Loki's coming out. I have hopes for it, but I'm also kind of scared at this point now. Echo, I don't know what the fuck that's going to be. I mean, my head is starting to hurt just thinking at what the future of this stuff might look like. And I know that the company and Bob Iger, they've said that they are going to reduce the output. They are going to reevaluate and scale back. But in addition to doing that, in addition to scaling back, can we also make it good? Can we also like actively make this quality television? And you talked about studying what makes their other shows work so well, like a Loki or a WandaVision. They need to fucking study the landscape of TV. Study other television shows outside of this stuff, which I know that they do. They've taken influence from other shows, like with Ally McBeal and She-Hulk. Like, they've done that, but they needed to actively do it even more, because the medium of television has come so far in the past 20 to 25 years that for them to put out the stuff that they're putting out, it's just not acceptable. It's not gonna fly. TV's way too fucking good right now. We have so much quality television. Why am I spending time watching this stuff on a week-to-week basis? Why do I care? Like, when I can go watch fucking Tedros and the Idol. Like, I have options, you know? I can go watch other stuff. I'm being fucking facetious there. That's not a good show. But you get my point. Like, there are many other options out there of stuff that we can watch. And so I need them to just go back to the drawing board. And perhaps they already are. You know, they had to get this out. Perhaps they are having those conversations right now. But this shit just not working. It's not working at all. And so we'll have to ultimately see what the outlook is. And we'll have to see how this stuff takes shape, you know, later this fall with the Marvels, if we do actually get that movie come this November. But folks, those are all of our thoughts about the Marvel Studios original series, Secret Invasion. And if you have thoughts about the finale or the series as a whole, definitely hit us up and let us know what you think. And with that being said, that's going to do it for us for this episode of Two Black Nerds. Thank you again for tuning into another podcast. We will not be back next week. We're going to take a little bit of time off. So definitely take some time to tap into our previous episodes and reviews. We have reviews out for Barbie and Oppenheimer and Mission Impossible and Indiana Jones. And of course, all the Secret Invasion stuff, as well as many other movies come this summer. We will be back eventually to review the latest and the greatest. But tap into all that stuff that's available to you right now. And until then, we will see y'all next time.
Yes, sir. We are Audi 5000. Please check out our Two Black Jedi and Two Black Sith collection at twoblacknerds.com. And remember, always bet on black. Appreciate y'all. Love y'all. Thank you for listening to another episode of Two Black Nerds, where we're too black,
too nerdy.
And we out, y'all. Peace. Again, one more flight.